With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. In 1620, the Pilgrim Fathers and the Mayflower set sail from Plymouth to explore the New World. More than 400 years later, Darren from Plymouth explores today's New World. Darren from Plymouth is D.D. Denslow, and he's digging deeper on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. This is Darren of Plymouth, Darren Denslow. And yeah, the bosses at TNT have obviously taken to my Jana accent and they've given me a whole hour of my own. So a big shout out to everybody working at TNT. I really, really appreciate the opportunity, to the guys in the studio who keep saving my neck. And of course, to the wonderful, wonderful Ranty Rickman, who's just been on for the last 2 hours. Thanks ever so much for everything you've done for me, my friend. So what have we got on the show for you this week? First up, we've got Diane. She's coming up in about 5 minutes, and we will be talking about the politics in Scotland, the cost of living, mortgages, interest rates, and also some of her personal experience from the COVID era. And then tomorrow, we've got Catherine McBean from PHA. We've got June Slater on Wednesday. We've got lawyer and political advisor James Turnbull coming on Thursday, and then Friday, and probably every Friday, my friend, fellow podcaster and psychology researcher will be coming up for us to do a roundup of the week's events and the stories that we haven't heard in the mainstream. So what's on today? What's been going on in the news? I was looking for headlines yesterday evening, and I looked on my very variety of recommended sources. And to be honest, I was like, oh my gosh, there isn't a massive amount of new, fresh stories. Maybe the mainstream media and their writers were putting their feet up because of all the Twitter goings on. They go, oh, we're not going to write stories this weekend. But then I looked this morning and it's all going on. So we've got COP27 just begins today. So all the very richest people who own multiple jets. In fact, there are 45,000 attendees, and I suspect almost all of them have flown into Egypt, a country and a with cities known for their lack of pollution and their environmentally friendly ways. So yeah, we've got COP27 going on, and actually right now as we speak, the climate lunatics from Just Oil are blocking up our motorways on the M25. Yes, climate change activists have gone ahead with planned action to target England's busiest motorway, despite a police operation to foil their plans. Sections of the M25, probably Britain's busiest motorway, all roads lead to the M25, were closed throughout the Monday morning rush hour as part of the protest by Just Stop Oil. Demonstrations come as the latest COP27 international climate change talks in Egypt get underway, and several junctions across Surrey, London and Kent, the busiest part of the British road network, have been impacted. But what they fail to tell you, and this that particular a couple of lines was, dare I say it, from the BBC, what they fail to tell you is actually Just Stop Oil, like many of the other activist groups, the climate terrorists that we're having to live with these days. What they don't tell you is that they are sponsored by the Rockefellers and the Gettys, probably two families that have done more to pump oil and put the whole of our society and make us reliant on fossil fuels for energy. Two of the people who have pushed it the hardest would be the Rockefellers and the Gettys. But they don't tell you that. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if actually the people who are taking part in these protests, so the green-haired lot of Just Oil, the tree huggers of Extinction Rebellion, it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't know who was financing their activities either. So yeah, watch out for them. If you're going on the M25 or any of the major motorways in the UK, expect some disruption. Okay. We're going to go straight to my guest in a minute. I think we're going to go straight and talk to her. So at TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7. Check out our merch. Go and buy a hoodie for somebody at Christmas or a mug. I love mugs. And whilst you're on the radio, on the tntradio.live website, we've got a chat function. Make sure you use that. Send some messages during the breaks. I will check just to see if anyone's listening to me. We've also got the soapbox, so you can put videos and audio clips in there. Okay, so we are online 24/7, online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Talking the talk.
I like the conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. You're with Darren Denslow on Digging Deeper, which I think is the name that we're going to stick with for the show. So a big shout out to Nikki if she's listening, because she came up with that name, one of our listeners. Thank you, Nikki. Hi. Welcome to my show. You are actually my first guest, so I'll call that a great honor for me. I was about to bestow that honor on you, but thank you ever so much. Could you just, your first time on TNT, could you just tell the listeners briefly who you are and what you do?
Hi, Darren. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me onto TNT. I am really excited. It's also my first radio appearance, so it's very, very exciting. And I obviously I've had some chat with you on various medium, and it's great to see you in person or speak to you in person. It's fabulous. My name is Di McMillan. I am a businesswoman in Glasgow. I am also the vice chairwoman for Freedom Alliance Party. I guess just looking at the current situation with the cost of living crisis, or cost of lockdown crisis, as I prefer to term it, and you mentioned COP27, it really is utter hypocrisy in the way that I see it anyway. I'm honoured to be here. Thank you so much.
Okay, no, brilliant. It's great to have you on here. And we have had some sort of gentle discussion on roughly the sort of things that we were going to talk about. You are into property management, correct? Yeah, you and your husband own a variety of properties across Glasgow. Is that right?
Yeah, we do. excuse me, sorry. We have got a portfolio of properties that provide accommodation for mainly young professionals in Glasgow. We have seen a bit of a roller coaster in the letting market over the past couple of years. When lockdown started in March 2020, what happened in the market was that around about 60% of tenants just picked up their sticks and left. We in Glasgow have got quite a transient population, and there are, particularly in the West End, it's, you know, we've got a lot of students and foreign workers who come for, jobs in hospitality and that kind of stuff. And when people saw what was happening around the world and borders were closing and flights were being cancelled, people just packed up the, you know, a hand luggage kind of thing and just left. They abandoned their properties, and landlords were left in a situation where all the tenants were just gone. Well, not all of them. 60% is the approximate figure. And that obviously was devastating for many landlords. I mean, we are, I suppose, fortunate in that it's actually a business that we run. We don't just have one small rental property that many landlords do have, because a lot of them were literally just left in a position where they had no income to pay the mortgage on these properties. And so It was very difficult for them, and obviously the rental market has lost a lot of the rental stock because of that. You know, smaller landlords have thrown their hands in the air and either sold their properties back into the privately owned accommodation kind of sector, and so the availability of rental properties has dropped massively. From that, along with various other government implemented things, such as the way that we're taxed, your interest, you don't get any relief on the interest that you have to pay for your loan, for your mortgage. And so, you know, that is actually a cost implication where running a property is concerned. And if you don't get tax relief on that, then it doesn't make it a viable proposition at all. So it's, you know, it's hardly surprising that many people have just walked away from it.
So you said 60% of your tenants, 60% of your tenants, or was that just a sort of a ballpark figure that was given across? The actual rental market, the rental sort of business environment. Were they all students?
So we were quite fortunate in that we specialize mainly for accommodation for working professionals, young professionals who want to live in the West End. They want the great kind of living vibe kind of thing, but it's not necessarily somewhere that they would be able to afford to buy. So we provide it's not budget accommodation, it's more in the way of shared flats. Is you know, so you've maybe got four or five tenants who live in the one flat who have come to Glasgow on, let's say, for example, a short-term contract, maybe a year or something like that, and they want to live in the best part of Glasgow that they can afford without having to commit to a mortgage or long-term kind of proposition. So it works well for them. And because we don't necessarily do much in the way of student accommodation, we didn't really lose many of our tenants. The impact was more general to the market. There are many landlords who just provide for students. And so where I say 60%, some may have lost 80% or 100% of their tenants. Where we, I suppose, were fortunate in that we deal with working professionals. So we didn't lose quite so.
You didn't lose so many of your tenants. Okay, so you're in Glasgow, and I'm going to come back to the housing story, the housing market in a minute. We're going to go to a break in a few minutes. I'm going to come back to that afterwards. But what's the general impact then of COVID on Glasgow? Now, Glasgow's always portrayed through the media as a grey, rainy Scottish city. They always show us the images of some of the council estates. You know, I think of Kez, although that might not be Glasgow, but I'm thinking of the story Kez, you know, the guy with the bird, or that might have been somewhere up north. But how has Glasgow as a city coped with the 2 years of lockdowns and the pandemic?
So I think that Glasgow is a grey and rainy city. Of course, we're in Scotland. However, the Scottish people are very resilient. I think that we do the best that we can in keeping a smile on our faces, irrespective of what's going on. And Glasgow is known to be a warm and welcoming place. We've always had a relatively high level of transient kind of communities. But yeah, I think it's done okay. I think the biggest issue that we have got is that, in actual fact, where you guys down south have got one layer of awful government, we've got two. So we've got Westminster and we've got Holyrood to have to deal with. So we've got two layers of bureaucracy and two layers of COVID rules and two layers of this and two layers of that. And so it makes it somewhat more difficult. And I understand that the people in Wales will have the same kind of situation with Mark Drakeford and co. And so, you know, where COVID stuff was concerned, you know, the masks and the hand sanitizer and all that kind of stuff, you know, you had the UK-wide regulations, I suppose you might call it, that were given to us by Westminster. We additionally had the Nicola Sturgeon hardcore version of whatever Boris was doing at that point in time. So yeah, it was particularly difficult. And I think that in addition to that, we obviously have we have this thing of people who want independence, people who don't want independence. Mm-hmm. And so the people who are heavy SNP supporters absolutely got on board with whatever wee Nicola was saying. That was a bit kind of fanatical. But that is kind of generally the level of her support, which is kind of fanatical. It's a bit bonkers.
I'm glad we've only got one layer of government in the UK. I'm not glad for that particular layer. I would like that. I'd like all layers of government to be removed from my life as possible. In Scotland, you mentioned independence. You've already voted on that in Scotland and you chose to stay with the UK. And, you know, you could make the argument, oh, if you keep voting for something, eventually you'll get the decision that they want. So I'm not a fan of Scotland voting for a referendum. We're gonna come right back, and after the break, I want to talk about that the raise in interest rates, how that affects your business, how that's going to affect the rental market in Glasgow, and just use that as an example that we can extrapolate across the UK. So please come right back with me and Di on TNT Radio.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
Let's look at the Twitter bans. These people that are doxing everybody. And I've got news for you. These trolls on Twitter are doxing you. If they think you have an opinion that people listen to and they don't like it, that's what they're doing. They're finding out everything they can about you. And this includes bank records, employment records, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Take it from me. I had a group that's involved directly in the InfoWar. They worked with the Atlantic Council, with Bellingcat, their former FBI, NSA, Homeland Security trainers, try to locate me, geolocate me for a few years. And they started trying to dox me, and they went through my life. And, you know, quite frankly, you start seeing some personal stuff put online and it's like, you know, what the hell? The reason they were doing it is if they could find me, then Ukraine could kill me. You know, and normally it's not to that extreme, but if they find you, they look through your life, they can try to get you fired or brand you as a traitor to your country or do all kinds of stuff.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
On the day that he was inaugurated, the Washington Post had an article on impeaching him.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
They had an absolute legitimate meltdown.
If you try to change a system that big, the system fights back.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
I actually became infuriated that someone had allowed Zuckerberg to tip the scale.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided.
This was the greatest billionaire assault on election integrity we've ever seen.
A billionaire-funded plot against the president.
Do you believe that they used the COVID emergency as an excuse to pull this partisan voter turnout operation?
Am I allowed to give you a one-word answer? Yes.
Rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
You're listening to Digging Deeper with D.D. Denslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome to Digging Deeper with me, Darren Denslow. That does sound very strange to say, and I've just checked some of the messages coming through on the live chat, and people are fighting over the Scottish independence reference, saying it was fixed and we need another run. And someone else is saying, what are you on about? Are you mad? Keep the messages coming in. I haven't got time to read all of those out. But and yes, you are right. Kez was North Yorkshire, and I do know that. I do know that. It was just something that spat out of my mouth. Anyway, we're back with Di, and we was talking about housing. Interest rates have just been put up in the UK by 0.75%. It's quite a large increase, even if it's just a small number, raising the core interest rate to 3%. How has that affected your housing business, your rental business, and how do you see that going to impact on housing and accommodation, tenancy, etc., over the country as a whole? Di?
So within our business, we generally have got fixed rates on any mortgages that we have. And so they are for a duration of maybe 2, 5, or 10 years. And each of the properties are individually mortgaged. So they will cut, you know, they'll have to be renewed as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly we... I guess it's not that we saw the whole thing coming years and years ago. It's just that we have always tended to err on the side of caution where these things are concerned, with a view to what happened in 2008-09 with the housing crisis back then, and banks being not terribly stable, or not the stable bodies that you would imagine that they ought to be. So we kind of future-proofed ourselves in that respect. However, we do have a different kind of mortgage for our own property. And so we are currently looking to do a fixed rate on that rather than having a variable tracker type thing where essentially you don't know what you're going to end up paying at the end of every month. You know, if interest rises, you know, if the Bank of England implement an interest rise, then that is directly affecting what you're going to pay in your mortgage payments every month. And so having a variable situation like that, I think, is not very comfortable for most people, because clearly it's only going to go in one direction, and that is certainly up at this point in time. That, along with the other things that people are having to pay so much more money for, you know, energy bills, electricity and gas, and I mean, even in the more rural areas of Scotland, there's much in the way of oil central heating systems, and so they're also having to pay more for their oil. So it's... yeah, it's not a very comfortable situation all round, is it? And, you know, there's obviously increases in food prices, which that impacts everyone.
Yeah, I mean, some of the food prices that I saw, I've got an article here, it's a few days old, actually. It's from Reach PLC, which does all the local news from most local, like Plymouth has Plymouth Live, which is a Reach PLC company. So they're like national. And they put one out in Wales the other day for some food price increases. And, you know, pasta, the cheapest bags of pasta, according to this article, and this is for the UK as a whole, have risen by 60 pence per pack over the last 12 months. Non-alcoholic beverages have increased by 14.5%. Vegetable oil has gone up 156p since September 2021. What else we got here? We've got some crazy ones. 125 gram bag of tea rose has gone up 30 pence from 60p to just under a pound. And I could go on and on and on with these price increases. And I am sure these are the absolute minimum that these papers can get away with. I suspect that actually you might see, you know, a 25% on top of what I've just quoted. And it's the same for mortgages. You know, I mentioned there was a 0.75% percentage point hike to a 3% core interest rate. So for the average person, and this is on a £200,000 mortgage with a 25-year term, which is effectively the same as a life sentence. Mortgage means death pledge. I know that's your business, Di, so you're sorry, you know. The average increase would be for somebody with a tracker mortgage, on a £200,000 mortgage would be £73 a month. And for a standard variable rate, they might see a £46 a month increase. That's just on a 0.75%. I can remember in 2008 when I owned a property, my mortgage over a couple of years, about a year and a half, 2 year period, went from about £350-400 a month all the way up to £1,000 a month. If we see those increases now, then we can see a massive problem similar to the financial crisis of 2008, but probably on steroids, where people can't afford to pay their property. Pay their mortgages, and we're going to see repossessions, not just across the UK, but across the Western world. Right, so we're about to go to a break, Di. When we come back, I want to sort of stick on sort of the Glasgow theme, but also your experience, because you have your own personal story with regards to COVID. We've mentioned, you know, I've asked you if it's okay that we discuss it. Hopefully you won't get too emotional, but that's all good. We'll be right back with Diane McMillan on TNT Radio.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Elon Musk has threatened to go thermonuclear by naming and shaming the companies that are bowing to the left and boycotting Twitter. Protests have erupted across Britain, where thousands of people have taken to the streets demanding an immediate general election. And Iran has admitted supplying military drones to Russia, but says the shipments were made well before the war began back in February.
If you miss your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Welcome back. This is Digging Deeper with Darren Denslow. I'm here with landlord, or landlady, should I say, Diane McMillan. And you have your own story to tell with regards to COVID. You have your own experience. I'm just going to throw that open to you. I'm not going to say any more and just allow you to speak, Di. So please, and you can say whatever or whatever you don't want to say. That's fine. Go.
Thanks, Darren. So I guess this story of mine began back in the run-up to the lockdowns in March 2020. It was very clear what was coming. You know, watching the media around the world reporting that cities and countries were just sealing themselves in and locking themselves up. And my husband and I, we were watching all this stuff and knew it was coming to the UK. And we were doing a bit of investigating on our own, and there was none of it that was making any sense, and there was none of it that was ringing true to us. And so we got involved in going to, you know, we went to the very first protest that there was in Glasgow against lockdown and against the COVID regulations, because it was just so clear that there was something going on. They weren't telling us a whole load of stuff, and it just did not make any sense at all. I mean, none of us actually knew what wasn't really making all that much sense, because it was just, it was such a confusing bunch of messaging that was going out at that point. And I think that they hadn't quite gotten their censorship, excuse me, in order. And so there were some things that were coming out in the mainstream media, and I was seeking that stuff out to see if if we could make two and two make four, but it was never making four. There was nothing that was adding up at all. Halfway through summer, Colin and I were at one of the protests, and I got a phone call to say that my mother wasn't very well. Now, up until that point, Colin and I had been asked by my family to not go to visit my mother because we were vectors of disease, obviously. We weren't locking ourselves in, and we weren't doing any of the stuff that the governments wanted us to do. And so we did what my family had asked, and we avoided going to spend time with my mum. And, you know, I'd always had a bit of a rocky relationship with her. Always, I was the rebellious, non-compliant child who, I think her favorite way to describe me was uncontrollable. And that's fine, you know, it's, that's just kids and their mums, really. So I didn't go to see her for several months, but still kept in contact, and I had discussions on the phone and all that kind of stuff. And I got this phone call to say she was unwell. And as it turned out, she was found wandering about the street looking for her handbag and her fags. And she was so confused. She had no idea what was going on. She was frankly an absolute mess. She had overdosed on her medications accidentally. Her decline with dementia was accelerating ridiculously, with lack of contact with people and not having the level of care that she had previously had.
Had she been put in a home? Am I correct in saying she'd been put in
Not at that point. That was her road into the care home, because her dementia just got to a point where it was dangerous for her to live at home on her own. She was leaving the gas hob on, and you know, that kind of stuff. So it was actually dangerous. And she did go into a home in November. God, it was actually a year tomorrow that she went into the home. And she survived 6 weeks in the home. She obviously wasn't in the best of health, but she wasn't 6 weeks away from dying before she went in there. Certainly not. She had one of the COVID injections. And when she went in, I believe that she had her second one, or maybe it was a booster that she had 2 weeks before she died. It was a difficult time. It was a difficult time.
So in conversations that we've had, you've mentioned midazolam. Do you believe that there may have been some end of life care given to your mother without anyone's permission, or?
Oh no, definitely. My mum died on technically it was the 2nd of January, but it was the 1st of January that we got a phone call to say that my mum was unwell, and that she had been given something to keep her, you know, to keep her calm, a sedative. Now, I did ask, and what have you given her? And at that point, the response was midazolam and morphine. Now, obviously, to...
So that was admitted to you then? That was admitted to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my younger sister, she was the person who mainly dealt with the care home. And she was on holiday when this whole thing happened. And so it was my sister that phoned me to let me know that mum wasn't well. And I asked her if the care home had given her midazolam. And she didn't know, she wasn't sure. So I phoned the care home to find out exactly what the situation was. And they told me that they believed they hadn't any sort of confirmation of that. The doctor hadn't been round or any of these kind of things. But they believed that she'd had a cardiac event.
Uh-huh.
And that they had given her a sedative. And when I asked, obviously, they said midazolam and morphine. And I asked how much of the midazolam that they had given. And the response was that they had given her the 5 milligrams of midazolam. Now, we all know that that isn't a level of sedation. That's actually an end-of-life thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very clear to me, particularly with having been involved in our side of things and understanding and looking at, you know, getting all the information that we get in our kind of freedom community, we'll say, we knew that we knew what was happening, and it was all a bit too late to, you know, there's nothing that you can do once that's been done. You know that's the path that you're going down, and the only thing that you can do is actually go and hold her hand and wait for her time to come, because there's no reversing that. You can't take it out of her veins. And the deal was done when they first did that. Now, so through conversation with the staff at the care home, I obviously inquired, why on earth did you give her this midazolam? She hadn't even seen a doctor. What is your justification for that?
Uh-huh.
Now, as it turns out, doctors will write prescriptions for care home residents, and they call it just-in-case medication. Now, this just-in-case medication is there for the nursing staff to administer should it be necessary, or should they deem it to be necessary. And so it was deemed necessary that my mum should be given midazolam and morphine on the 1st of January because she had cold hands and cold feet. And they decided that she had had a cardiac event because of this. Now, my mum was diabetic and she always had cold hands and cold feet. You know, it's part of the older person illnesses and that kind of stuff. And so, I was a bit taken aback by the fact that they hadn't even had a doctor around to see her, and yet they had administered a lethal dose of midazolam and morphine. We obviously went to the care home as quickly as we could after the phone call. And to start with, my mum was still semi-coherent. She did say some things that she claimed that she hadn't been given a drink of water for several days. She claimed that she had needed to go to the toilet. She claimed that none of these things had been taken care of. And on the back of her statements, it made me wonder, was it easier just to sedate her or allegedly sedate her? You know? Someone who's constantly ringing the bell to say, can I have water? Can I have water? Can I have water? Or you need to help me to go to the bathroom. And so was she just a pain in the backside who needed to be kept quiet, I guess, is where my line of questioning has gone.
Or was there something more sinister that was done in a widespread way across care homes across the UK to elderly patients who were sent into homes under the cover of the COVID pandemic?
Undoubtedly, mm-hmm. without a doubt in my mind, in any case. Certainly that was one of the things at the start of the lockdown that alerted me to the hideous fraud that was mm-hmm. being perpetrated in you know, the propaganda and then propaganda and censorship, they go hand in hand, don't they?
Uh-huh.
And it's the whole thing of leading a narrative where everybody in the country thinks, well, not everybody, there's some of us that were a wee bit more kind of curious about the facts, we'll say. And so, yeah, definitely the use of the midazolam and morphine at the start of the lockdowns was horrendous. My understanding is that we in the UK used a 3 years supply of midazolam within 3 months.
Yeah, I think John O'Looney, who was a funeral director, yeah, he claimed 2 years. There was a 2 year procured supply that was used in 2 months. Right, we're gonna go to a break, Di. I really, really appreciate you telling us your story. I know it's quite, you know, it's a sad story. So thank you. But when we come back, we're gonna talk about the Freedom Alliance, the SNP, and my favorite issues. You've been a thumbs up. Called the Gender Recognition Act that's being put through Parliament in Scotland, which I believe has actually been approved or voted for. So we're going to come right back and we're going to be talking trans stuff. It's my favorite issue on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Ron DeSanctimonious. Two short words, 7 syllables, and the Twitterverse has lost its mind.
That could have waited until after the primaries.
Well, actually, no, it couldn't, because what President Trump was doing last night was firing a warning shot across Ron's bow, letting him know that he knows that Ron has been colluding with Kevin McCarthy and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and the Lincoln Project and all the rest of Never Trumpers that want to prevent a Trump 24 run. DeSantis would not be governor of Florida if it weren't for President Trump's efforts. He only won by 0.4% in a machine recount against Andrew Gillum, a crack-smoking, malprostitute-hiring, hotel room passed out, disgrace of a man. And DeSantis could still only win by 0.4%. He owes President Trump. President Trump was simply reminding him of that. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Hi, Gemma Simon here from the Newcastle Jets for RAD. Playing any sport means setting the right example. And it's not just about how players focus and behave when they're on the field. It's also about their actions and behaviours off it. That includes things like drink driving, drug driving, and driver distractions. No one can perform properly if they're under the influence or distracted. So make sure you make the right decisions when it comes to getting behind the wheel of a car, and you'll definitely earn respect for it.
A message from RAD.
This is Digging Deeper with DD Denslow on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Digging Deeper. I'm loving hearing that jingle come up in the breaks. That's brilliant. Lots of support coming in on the live chat for you, Di, and your story. A lot of vitriol and hatred towards Matt Hancock, who's going to be appearing in the jungle and getting a nice six-figure, 400 grand payday for his crimes. That's his reward. Terrible world that we live in. So before I said we're going to come on to the Freedom Alliance, the SNP, and the Gender Recognition Act. So first of all, let's start with the Gender Recognition Act, your view on it, and how the Freedom Alliance fits into that in, I'm assuming, opposing not just that act, but some of the behaviour of the Scottish National Party, who are truly terrible and have been drinking the woke juice for way, way too long. So what is the Gender Recognition Act, Di, and what does it mean?
Do you mean the Gender Racket Act?
The Gender Racket Act. Call it what you like.
Yep. We have got a government who is completely hell bent on indoctrinating from a very, very young age. What they're doing in schools is just absolutely shocking. We, in actual fact, have got kids at 12 years of age who they're not allowed to change their subjects in school, but they can actually change their gender, allegedly, and their parents aren't to be told. Mm-hmm. It's a policy in the schools that have, the SNP have introduced all manner of things in Scotland that is just truly horrifying. It's truly horrifying. So Colin, my husband, he used to own a hotel very close by to the Sandyford Clinic, which is the gender,
reassignment. Yeah.
Yeah, that clinic. And in actual fact, it was a hotel that many of the clinic patients just to stay in. And you would find that Mr. Bloggs would come and he would check in and, you know, he'd be in his workman's outfit and, you know, just straight from work with his dirty old jeans and his dirty work boots and his hard hat under his arm. And the next morning, as he was on his way to the Sandyford Clinic, he would give you a good telling off for saying, Mr. Bloggs. He would say, it's Miss Bloggs. Hang on a wee minute. Do you not see the dress that I'm wearing and the lipstick that I have on? Haven't you seen that I've got some nice red nail polish on today?
Yeah. And so I'm using women's toilets.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it was there's such a level of fraud in the whole thing. And, you know, the gender recognition certificate is a certificate for people to claim to be of the opposite sex to that to which they were born. Mm-hmm. Now, see, if you've got a penis, you're not a woman. Uh-huh. I'm really sorry. I know that's a bit blunt, but, you know, there's a biology.
It's not blunt. It's actually a scientific fact. There's nothing blunt about scientific facts. Scientific facts are scientific facts, as in the real science, not the science, which is just a trademark brand that's published by our media. So the Gender Recognition Reform Bill, Gender Recognition Act? No, the Gender Recognition Act of 2004 is a UK-wide act that allows people to go through a process that they can then acquire a GRC, which is a gender recognition certificate, which allows them to sort of officially change their sex. The Gender Recognition Reform Bill would change how people go about obtaining the GRC, something the SNP, the Scottish National Party, have pledged to bring to Scotland in line with international best practice. MSPs, so that's members of Scottish Parliament, voted on the bill in Holyrood on October the 27th, and shockingly, it passed 88 in favour to 33 against. Are those all 88 of those in favour? Were they SNPs? Were they member of the SNP?
They were members of the SNP. They were members of the Labour Party and various others. The issue there, though, is that it was meant to, this vote in Holyrood Parliament was meant to be a free vote. the SNP had said that they were not going to use the whip. Now, what the whip is, for those that don't understand or that don't know yet, is so the SNP party will dictate to their MSPs how they have to vote on a certain subject. Now, when the SNP decided to use the whip to ensure that they got the kind of vote result that they wanted, what actually happened were, I think it was nine MSPs who refused to the whip. They refused to vote the way that they were being told to vote. Now, particularly of interest, the Scottish Government Minister for Community Safety, Ash Regan, resigned from the SNP prior to this vote so that she could vote against it. She either had to resign or she would have been sacked after the vote if she had voted against it while still a member of the SNP. So she had to resign from her role in government before going into this vote. Now, she's the Minister for Community Safety. That's relevant.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If she sees that there are massive issues with the proposed amendments, there's no one more qualified to say there are problems mm-hmm. here, mm-hmm. you know? So the fact that she resigned minimally has to highlight to people there's something desperately wrong mm-hmm. with this whole thing.
Yeah, and the proposed amendments are that they're effectively they're going to make the obtaining of the GRC, the gender recognition certificate, incredibly easy. And I think just loosely reading the bill, effectively people can now in Scotland get up and identify as a woman, and that self-identification is enough for them. For example, if it's a man who suddenly goes, I'm wearing a dress, I was a butch workman, I fancy going into the females' toilets now, they can now access women's spaces. If they could potentially go to female prisons, they could even maybe answer yes to the question when they're in the hospital, oh, are you pregnant? They could probably, they could answer yes to that now because they've just woken up that morning and identified as a woman. Is that the nature of this bill? And they are trying to push that across schools and all age ranges. Is that correct?
More or less. I think one of the more profound things is that the age qualification for the gender recognition certificate has gone down from 18 to 16.
Right.
Now, at 16 years old, not only are you not qualified to go in and buy a bottle of vodka or to go and buy a packet of fags or to go and vote.
Mm-hmm.
To make these kind of
sex.
Yeah, but it's a whole thing of, see, at 16, you're still so, I'm not going to say immature because that's the wrong word. I think that you've not developed enough through the hormonal changes that happen to your body, whether you're a boy or a girl. I think, the hormonal changes of puberty are such that it's confusing. You're all over the place. There's no real way to be able to fix a decision one way or the other. Even, often teenagers kind of go through this phase or period of investigating what these physical changes mean to them, and whether, it means that they are attracted to boys or attracted to girls or attracted to both, or, But that's hormones. And, you know, I'm at the other end of this. I'm going through menopause. And so my hormones are kind of almost as crazy as they were when I was a 15 or 16 year old kid. And you wouldn't necessarily want to make...
Big Pharma have got drugs for that. Big Pharma have got drugs for that, Di.
Yeah. Nah, no, thank...
It might all be about that. The whole trans issue, if we was to really, really to start digging into it, we might find actually behind the push, behind all the wokeness, is the money men of Big Pharma who are pushing and pushing these drugs. They probably might even be repurposed drugs that they need to get rid of. And that is why we have, you know, just like we had the COVID pandemic, it might be why we're now experiencing this LGBTQ and trans pandemic. Di, I really appreciate coming on my show. It was my first show. We're down to the last 30 seconds. Thanks for telling us a story. I'm sure we'll invite you back. And to all the listeners, thank you. Jeremy Now is coming up in any moment after the next break. And please come back tomorrow. Check out Rickman at 9 o'clock UK time. And then me at 11 o'clock. Brilliant. Come back on TNT Radio.